Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. This episode takes you inside the evolving role of a VP of engineering, far beyond a standard job description. The AI hosts discuss why the role is highly contextual, shaped by company size, leadership culture, and organizational maturity. I share the core accountabilities I've been held to, ensuring software quality and resilience, fostering people engagement, retaining and developing talent, and building the skills teams need to stay competitive. The conversation also explores the VP's strategic importance in business alignment, global talent management, and transformation initiatives, while contrasting the role with that of a CTO. Finally, we touch on the personal evolution required to succeed, developing V-shaped skills, mentoring leaders, and balancing the rewards of culture building with the challenges of tough decisions. Let's dive in.
Have you ever looked at one of those big leadership titles like VP of Software Engineering and just wondered, what do they actually do?
Right. Beyond the fancy title on LinkedIn, what's the day-to-day? What are the real challenges?
Exactly. And that's why we do the deep dive. Mm-hmm. We try to cut through the noise, you know, get past the standard job descriptions and find the real insights.
The stuff that actually matters.
Precisely. So today, we're diving deep into that very role, the VP of Software Engineering. It's often misunderstood, I think.
Definitely. And our guide for this is a fantastic article by Phil Clark. It's on his website, rethinkyourunderstanding.com.
Yeah, it's called, So What Does a VP of Software Engineering Do? Super direct title.
And it's incredibly candid. Apparently, it came about because a colleague just flat out asked him the question.
Huh. Sometimes the simple questions are the hardest.
Totally. And his answer, the article, it goes way beyond a generic description. It's really shaped by his own journey, the changes he led, the different leaders he worked with.
So we'll stick close to his insights today, maybe add a bit of our own perspective. But seriously, you should check out the full piece on his site. It's worth the read.
Absolutely. For all the nuances.
Okay, let's get into it. Because what you think a VP of engineering does, probably only half the story.
Maybe not even the most interesting half.
Right. The common idea is, well, you lead engineers, manage projects, make sure the code ships, something like that.
Yeah, sort of the standard view. But what's great is how Phil immediately says, look, it's not black and white at all.
Ah, so it depends. The classic consultant answer.
Huh. Well, yes, but for good reason. He says it fundamentally depends on critical factors like the company's size, its stage startup versus mature the leadership culture there.
And the specific context, right? Mm. Makes sense. It's not a one-size-fits-all job.
Not at all. And his own story at Parchment really shows that evolution. He joined over 10 years ago as a director, already had lots of experience.
But the situation wasn't ideal.
Far from it. Engineering teams were stuck in these waterfall silos. Delivery was slow, fragile, and kind of disconnected from what the business actually needed.
Oof. Sounds familiar for some places.
Indeed. So his first big task, his accountability, was to transform that, to really push them towards agile, lean DevOps practices.
So they could actually ship stuff reliably and confidently.
Exactly. But Phil stresses this wasn't just about new tools or processes. It needed him, the team, other leaders even, to really learn, unlearn, and relearn.
That unlearning part sounds key and probably quite difficult.
Immensely. It requires real humility, admitting that what worked before might not work now, getting people to let go of old habits. That's tough.
And the scale changed dramatically too, right? Yeah. You mentioned he started as director.
Yeah, with maybe a few dozen engineers. Mm-hmm. By the time he was VP, it was over 175 people across 10 countries.
Wow. Okay, that scale alone changes everything. Your responsibilities must shift completely.
Totally. You go from more direct team leadership to really architecting a whole global engineering organization. And it's from that perspective he develops his core ideas.
Right. Building and sustaining something much bigger.
Which leads us nicely into what he calls his four enduring accountabilities. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. It moves beyond just managing engineers.
Okay. The four pillars. What's the first one?
The first is software quality and resilience. Pretty fundamental.
Meaning? Making sure the software actually works and stays working?
Basically, yes. Ensuring delivery is stable, reliable. It involves pushing for automation, working to shorten lead times, how long it takes an idea to get to production, and using metrics like flow metrics to actually measure and improve things.
So it's not just fixing bugs. It's building a system that prevents them or recovers quickly. A predictable engine.
Exactly. Building that reliable engine the business depends on.
Makes sense. What's pillar number two?
People engagement.
Yeah.
Because as Phil points out, without engaged teams, that reliable delivery engine just grinds to a halt.
Obvious when you say it, but maybe overlooked sometimes. What does real engagement look like in his view?
Well, he really emphasizes psychological safety, creating an environment where people feel safe to speak up, take risks, maybe even fail sometimes without getting blamed.
That feels crucial, but maybe harder to achieve than it sounds, especially if the culture isn't already there.
Definitely. It requires conscious effort. Phil connects engagement directly to safety, inclusion, autonomy, letting people have control over their work, a sense of purpose, and leaders they actually trust. You can't get quality software without engaged people building it.
Okay, quality software, engaged people.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
Keeping those people. Pillar three is retention and development.
The talent war. He says attracting talent is hard, but keeping them is harder.
He does. And it's not just about perks. It means building real career frameworks, coaching your managers to be better leaders, providing actual growth opportunities.
Investing in people's careers within the company.
Especially, he notes, investing time in engineers stepping up into leadership roles. That's critical for long-term health. You're building your future.
Got it. Quality, engagement, retention.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fourth pillar?
Skills and capabilities. This is about keeping the teams sharp, competitive in today's tech world.
So keeping up with new technologies.
Yes, but strategically. Phil warns against just chasing every shiny new tool. It's about deliberate investment in learning, in experimentation, and building the right capabilities that actually align with where the business needs to go.
Not just tech for tech's sake.
Precisely. And what's really powerful is how he ties everything else back to these four pillars. Things like adopting value stream management or integrating AI tools or working closely with product and finance.
It all served one or more of those core accountabilities.
Exactly. It provides a really clear focus. It's not just a random list of tasks. It's a system for building a high-performing engineering org.
That framework is super helpful. Whether you aspire to that role or just want to understand what makes a tech team tick, those pillars seem key.
Absolutely. They explain why certain things matter.
Now, upholding those pillars must get more complaints when your team isn't just in one office, right? You mentioned Phil managed teams across 10 countries. Let's talk about balancing global talent.
Yeah, that's a huge dimension. He makes the point that just hiring in the U.S. often isn't scalable or, frankly, sustainable long term. Cost is a factor, but also access to different talent pools.
So building a mix of teams, nearshore, offshore, local.
Exactly. Creating a model that integrates them effectively. And this wasn't always planned growth either. Sometimes it came through acquisitions.
So inheriting teams in new places where their own ways of working.
Right. Inheriting diverse teams with existing cultures, practices, expectations. The big challenge then becomes creating alignment. How do you build one cohesive engineering org across different regions, time zones, cultures?
That sounds incredibly difficult, like managing multiple companies almost.
It requires immense effort in communication, standard setting, and cultural integration. But getting it right is vital for scaling, for retaining talent you acquire, and keeping that delivery resilience strong as you grow.
It really underscores that this VP role isn't just, as we said, keeping the trains running. It's deeply involved in transformation and business alignment.
Absolutely. It's far beyond just the tech. Phil talks about being heavily involved in the technical due diligence for acquisitions.
So assessing the tech and teams of companies they might buy.
Yes, and aligning engineering metrics with business outcomes, even contributing to company valuations during funding rounds or when the company changed ownership.
Wow, that's straight up business strategy.
Right.
Connecting tech health to financial health.
Correctly. And he also championed huge long-term strategic shifts internally, moving from waterfall to agile, lean, DevOps, continuous delivery. These are massive transformations.
Yeah, those aren't quick wins. They take years.
Years of sustained effort. Plus, adopting things like value stream management VSM for that end-to-end view of how value gets delivered.
And you mentioned AI earlier.
Yes, driving AI literacy and adoption. But again, strategically. Fostering a culture of learning and experimentation so teams build real capability, not just playing with new toys.
It drives home a point Phil makes, doesn't it? That engineering really only matters if it's tied to the business's growth engine.
Exactly. Otherwise, he warns, it risks being seen purely as a cost center, just an expense line item.
Which really makes you think, for any organization, how well integrated is tech leadership? Is engineering a strategic partner or just a necessary cost?
A really important question for companies to ask themselves.
Definitely. And speaking of leadership, that common question always comes up. What's the difference between a VP of engineering and a CTO? How does Phil see it?
He offers a pretty clear distinction based on his experience. A CTO, chief technology officer, generally puts technology first, people second.
Okay. Focus on the tech vision.
Right. Setting the vision, connecting tech strategy to business growth, influencing investors. Their focus is more on what technologies the company should bet on for the future.
And the VP of engineering
puts people and practices first, technology second. Their main job is building those engaged teams and the strong delivery systems needed to actually execute the strategy at scale.
So the VPing focuses on the how people and systems deliver what the CTO envisions.
Precisely. That what versus how distinction is really useful. Both vital roles, but different focal points, different skill sets sometimes too.
And it sounds like the culture around leadership massively impacts the VP role too. Phil had some varying experiences there.
Oh, hugely. He talks about reporting to a leader for years who gave him a lot of trust and autonomy. That was a period of real progress, building team autonomy, improving delivery, flow.
Sounds ideal, but it wasn't always like that.
No. He contrasts it sharply with the time a new CTO came in, someone who, as Phil puts it, spoke agile but led with command and control habits.
Ouch, that sounds like a clash waiting to happen.
He describes it as feeling like a hand grenade tossed into their progress. It really shows how fragile transformation can be if leadership styles aren't aligned. Progress can stall or even reverse.
Wow. So a change in your boss can completely change your ability to do the job effectively.
Absolutely. He had another experience after an acquisition reporting to a VP of product who owned both product and technology.
Interesting structure. How did that work?
He said while their philosophies sometimes differed, they managed to find common ground, especially around people and culture. The big takeaway, he says, is that your autonomy and your alignment with your boss and your peers fundamentally shape the job.
It's not just the job description on paper. It's the reality of your influence and support.
Exactly. And it highlights this often underestimated part of the role, setting and sustaining long-term strategy, digital transformation, agile adoption. These take consistent effort.
But there's a catch, right? Depending on who's above you.
There is. A change in senior leadership can accelerate your strategy or it can completely derail it almost overnight. It's a constant reality check.
So for anyone in or aspiring to these roles, it's about navigating the environment, not just the technical challenges. Adaptability seems key.
Hugely important.
Now, let's talk about the skills needed. Phil describes this interesting shift from T-shaped to V-shaped skills. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, it's a great visual. Early career T-shaped skills are common. Deep expertise in one area, say engineering, with broad understanding across related fields.
Like the top bar of the T is the breadth, the vertical is the depth.
Exactly. But at the executive VP level, he realized T-shaped wasn't enough. He needed V-shaped skills.
Okay, V-shaped, what does that look like?
It means maintaining that depth in engineering, but also developing meaningful depth in several other critical domains. Not just surface knowledge, but real understanding.
Why is that necessary at the exec level?
to connect effectively with other leaders, to speak their language, understand their priorities, product, finance, strategy, HR. It allows you to ensure engineering aligns with the whole business, not just operate in a silo. You need to translate engineering impact into business value.
Sounds like a commitment to continuous broad learning, like being part engineer, part strategist, part financial analyst.
It really is. He lists areas he deliberately invested in. Scaling organizations, things like team topologies, value streams, mastering strategy and OKRs, understanding funding, M&A, thinking like a CEO about growth, margins, trade-offs.
Wow.
Plus, enough depth in product management to be a true partner, financial fluency COGS, OPEX, ROI, understanding the money side, staying credible on modern architecture without being in the weeds, and constantly honing the leadership craft itself.
That's a lot. It's not just about being a great engineer anymore.
Not even close. And it wasn't just formal learning either. He mentions mentoring outside engineering, like in a Women in Leadership program.
Giving back and broadening perspective.
And he heavily credits his mentors and his external network. Talking to peers in other companies, benchmarking, sharing successes and failures that massively accelerated their transformation. You don't do this alone.
That network effect is so powerful. But alongside all this growth and achievement, Phil is also really honest about the tough parts of the job, isn't he?
He is. He doesn't gloss over it. Being the VP meant being accountable for difficult decisions, including cost-saving measures and, yes, layoffs.
That must be incredibly hard.
He calls them the darkest days, trying to balance empathy for people with the harsh business realities while still trying to maintain trust. It's a side of leadership many don't talk about, requiring serious emotional resilience.
It's important to acknowledge that. But he balances it with the rewarding aspects too, right? The highlights.
Oh, absolutely. He talks about the immense satisfaction of contributing to major organizational growth, seeing team members you mentored grow into leaders themselves.
Seeing the positive impact of engineering's partnership across the business.
Yes, seeing the organization thrive, mentoring others, helping build a culture people are proud of, where they feel valued and connected. That stuff, he says, is what fuels your purpose, makes the hard work worthwhile.
Building something lasting, something bigger than yourself.
Exactly. It really shows the full spectrum of the role, the strategic demands, the operational complexity, and the deep human element. Constant learning, constant evolution.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this up. Phil's piece gives such a rich picture. We've talked about the VP ensuring software is reliable and resilient.
Keeping teams engaged, developing and retaining talent, investing smartly in skills.
Leading transformation, aligning with the business, getting involved in M&A and funding.
Driving things like AI adoption strategically, navigating those complex leadership cultures and structures.
Expanding your own skills from T-shape to V-shape, leveraging mentors and networks, balancing global teams. Phew. It's a lot.
It really is comprehensive.
And it comes back to his main point. The only truly honest answer to what does a VP of engineering do is...
It depends. Yeah. It depends on the company, its maturity, its culture. Phil's story is just one version, but it's incredibly insightful.
It really provides a profound lens on it all.
And ultimately, as Phil puts it so well, the job is really about building systems, systems of delivery, systems of leadership that last, systems that outlive any single leader and sustain the people, the products, and the business value over the long haul.
That idea of building lasting systems is powerful, which leads to a great question for you listening. How do you think about building lasting impact in whatever role you're in now, or maybe one you aspire to?
A great thought to leave folks with.
Absolutely. And again, for much more depth, please do check out Phil Clark's full article. It's over at rethinkyourunderstanding.com. Really valuable stuff.